We start.
Now we're set.
Today is Tuesday, October the 11th, 2005, and this is the start of an interview with Harry Banfield at Cleveland State University. My name is Eugene Yakubo, and I'll be the interviewer. The interview is done in connection with the Euclid Corridor Project. How are you, Mr. Banfield?
I'm fine, thank you.
Before we begin discussing the city mission and your role in the organization, I would like to get to know a little more about you. For example, where and when were you born?
Okay, I was born in Mentor, Ohio, which is not too far from Cleveland, and that was in 1930, August 22nd, 1930. So I've been around a few years.
1930, huh? It was 1 year after the Great Depression, huh?
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Have you lived in the Cleveland area most of your life then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So where have you lived in the Cleveland area?
Okay. When I was still an infant, my folks moved from Mentor, Ohio to Chesterland, Ohio in Geauga County. And then I grew up there and until I was probably in my late 20s, I resided there. In fact,
until your late 20s, huh?
Mm-hmm. And from there, I moved to Lake County, a little town outside of Painesville called Leroy Township.
Leroy Township?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
I've never heard of it.
No, not too many people have. Our mailing address is Painesville. We have to borrow their post office.
Oh, I see. So what's it like to live in Geauga County as opposed to coming down to Cleveland and seeing the city life and living in Geauga? Is it different?
Oh, it's much different, much more quiet. I grew up enjoying being out there. I had classmates who couldn't wait to leave because it was so quiet, but somehow I have always enjoyed that, and where we live now is still quite rural. And so there are the things about nature that we enjoy that we couldn't enjoy in the city. But we're glad to be close to the city and certainly grateful for it as a city.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any siblings, Mr. Banfield?
Yes, I have three brothers, two older and one younger.
And they reside in the area as well?
Yes, so right.
You're very close with them, obviously.
Yes, right.
So, in reading some of the information about the city mission, I found out that you're a reverend.
Yes.
What made you go that, kind of route and go to school and, a reverend?
Okay, well, I grew up in a Christian family, and I think because of being in a rural area, the church was a large part of our lives. And I made a commitment to the Lord when I was 10 or 11 years of age. And as I grew up into my high school years, I became interested in what I was going to do with my life, as does everyone, I believe. And because of my different involvements, I felt led to give my life to serving God in the pastorate.
Your family was supportive of you going that route?
Yes, they were encouraging. Mm-hmm. Right.
Is there any history of other family members who went that route?
No. As believers, there has been a good heritage, but not necessarily formally in clergy. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what the city mission is?
Well, it's an outreach, a Christian outreach to hurting people of most any situation. It's interesting to reflect on the fact that there were two organizations that affected my early life and as far as my decision was concerned, and one of them was the City Mission and the other was Youth for Christ, which both were located here in Cleveland. But as in my teen years, I began participating with a group from our church and holding a service once a month at the City Mission when it was at East 9th in St. Clair. And I think that was, you know, the seed was planted at that time. And also in that period of time, the City Mission had teams that would go out to the local churches and they would have a service and present the story of the City Mission. And there would be individuals who would share their testimonies as to how they found the Lord and how their life had changed as a result of that. So this had been an influence early in my life. And Youth for Christ is something that actually had its beginnings in Cleveland in the City Mission building. And when they had no other place to go and couldn't afford, they began meetings there. And so as a teenager, I attended the Youth for Christ rallies there. And then later on, they grew into meeting in a large hall in the city. And so I would say, in addition to my church, the influence of those organizations of Cleveland had a great part in my life and directing me.
How long have you been associated with the City Mission for?
Well, I would say, not in employment, obviously, or career, but just as a volunteer, probably since my high school days. And my father before me volunteered at the mission as well. And you asked as to what the mission is. And to some, it would probably be regarded as a Christian social service ministry dealing with both the spiritual and the social needs of the city, which has varied through the years. You know, the needs have changed.
The needs of the City Mission has changed over the years?
To accommodate the changes in society. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's included, moving from one location to another because of the need to expand in size, and then also to address the specific needs of the community at a given time.
But you first heard of the mission through your father, and your father was a volunteer in the City Mission.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How long was he about? Was it a...
See, that would go back to my childhood, probably in the mid to late 30s, right?
So what has your role been personally in the City Mission and in its expansion and the City Mission's changes over the years?
Well, in 1970, I was invited to become the first full-time youth director of the City Mission. They had always had programs for young people, but they didn't have a permanent staff member there devoted to that. People shared responsibilities, but the opportunities with the young people were increasing and the need for this type of ministry was there. And so I accepted that call in 1970 and served in that capacity until 1983,
as the
youth director.
Mm-hmm. How can you tell us something about the about being the youth director of your first job there?
Right. It's interesting. I was invited to become because I was a pastor then in Lake County, and my wife and I volunteered for a week to direct the City Mission Children's Camp at their facility, a Grand Valley Christian Center, and of course, I had known the director. He had known me all my life as well. But at the conclusion of that week of camp, I received the invitation to come on their staff full time. And at that time, the mission had a Sunday school, which it has had historically. There's always been programs designated for the youth of the city from the very, very beginning. And then we developed that into like teen clubs and broke it down later to a junior high night and a senior high night. And we got a basketball league together and the kids, we joined the city leagues and played there and so forth. And so that was pretty much the program. We, over the years, that has developed. We would use some of the older teenagers who were reliable and dependable to staff our summer camp, and they would be pony boys and dishwashers and waitresses, and they filled that slot. We used the camp not only for our own use, but also we accommodate other organizations who would rent the camp, say, for a week at a time during the summer program. So it provided a job opportunity and a work experience for our older teenagers. And many of them now have expressed appreciation for that foundation that they received. And many have gone on to successful lives.
And the youth ministry, does it still operate and still serve the same functions as it did before?
Yes, and again, it has adjusted to the needs, and now at our facility on East 55th in Carnegie, they have their whole building, they have their own building, whereas we had one floor in the previous building. They have their own building, which is called Crossroads, and it has a regulation-sized gymnasium, the youth ministry does. It has a computer lab. And they do after-school programs. Our buses go to several schools in the immediate community after school, and the children that are signed up and their parents approve of it are bused to our facility for, you know, additional education, but also Christian emphasis.
So, who does the youth ministry cater to?
Currently, it caters to, I think there are four schools probably in a fairly immediate area, and that, you know, that as many as we can accommodate from those schools. Previously, when I started, we started with one bus. Today, we have four buses. As the situation in the lives of some of our children changed and they moved from the central city further out, we kept extending our bus routes, which probably wasn't practical, but we didn't want to lose those kids. So we've tried to accommodate their needs. And I'm also very pleased at this time that there is a scholarship program which enable young people to go into secondary education. We have a donor who provides scholarships through Baldwin Wallace College, and we have currently two young people who are finishing their degrees there. Others have gone to places like Moody Bible Institute, those who had wanted to go into Christian ministry. And Cedarville University has welcomed some of our people into there. So a lot of people aren't aware of that piece of the program for the youth. And this is also available to adults coming out of our programs. There aren't as many because of family responsibilities that can pursue that, but it is available, and some have taken advantage of that.
How do children hear about this youth ministry program?
Mostly word of mouth. It's interesting. We have a neighborhood ministry which includes a mother's club, and some of those mothers who are now grandmothers and maybe great-grandmothers have attended that for years. And if I'm on campus quite often, somebody will come up to me and remember remind me that they have been there and have benefited, as have their families.
So after serving as the director of the youth ministry, mm-hmm. What was next in line for you?
Well, I served as an associate director for 2 years, beginning in 83, and served under Reverend Clifton Gregory. Mm-hmm. And he served for 35 years prior to that time. And like I say, I grew up knowing him as the director of the mission. And so I served under him for 2 years in training. And then in 85, I became the executive director when he retired.
What is the responsibilities of being the executive director of the city mission?
Well, obviously, it's the oversight. There are six different ministries associated with the city mission, each with the director. And so the executive director obviously has to have the oversight of that and at the same time has the responsibility of seeing that there is provision made financially to support those various programs and buildings and so forth. So that's probably the weightiest part of that. And I had the privilege of being the director during the location change from West 4th Street in the Warehouse District to East 55th in Carnegie. And although it was a challenge finding a place to go, we eventually were able to find and locate there at East 55th in Carnegie.
As far as financial support goes, do you receive support from the city of Cleveland, or is it just private donors?
We are financed through private donors and foundations and individuals. We do not receive government funding on any level due to the separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. And that's we're comfortable with that. We feel that we're able to, continue ministry. Sometimes under government funding, the funds are there, and then they're the next administration withdraws that type of funding and so forth. So actually, it's a job to raise the funds, but at the same time, it's more, I think you're more secure the way we are. Mm-hmm. And we're free to teach what we do teach as well.
How do you attract donors to be involved in the organization, through campaigns or through?
That also has evolved with time and modern technology. As a child, and I remember those teams visiting our church, that was happening throughout the area, the Cleveland area, probably the teams going out to the country churches and so forth, and neighborhood churches. And that was kind of the development department. And the representatives were coming out of the youth organization at that time, which was known as the Christian Companionship Club. These were young adults who grew out of the Sunday school and through their teen years and into their young adulthood. Many of them were very gifted, and the mission always saw to it that they brought a program, that would be enjoyable to the people. And always among them would be someone representing one of the ministries, sharing how their life had been changed as a result of being there. And that plus, newspaper, articles and so forth. And the mission had a weekly live radio broadcast, and it was called Mission Melodies, and I think it was on WTAM.
Mission Melodies,
and that was primarily live music. I participated in that in my youth, and Reverend Gregory would have comments in between the musical portions and so forth, and it was a fun thing.
Does the mission still do something like such as that, live broadcast or things of that nature?
We did it through my tenure there as director. We were on WCRF, which is Christian Radio in Cleveland, as well as WCLV, the fine arts station. We had a Sunday morning broadcast on WCLV. And that was sponsored by an organization called the Gospel Workers Society, which used to be Union Gospel Press, which was at, on the west side. I understand that old building is going to be it's going to be renovated to a nice lodgings, yeah. But anyway, they have had a heart for the mission for years and years, and so. So, but more recently they went, they're doing some TV spot announcements and so forth, again, progressing with technology and yes, so there's that. And then there are major mailings and so forth, and we have a anniversary banquet and a spring banquet every year, which at which people are challenged, you know, to donate. And now they're doing things like they just finished with a golf outing, which netted charity event. Mm-hmm. And there's a run that they do also, which is a charity run for the city mission. So we've been very progressive, really, when you think about it over the years, sort of addressing...
proactive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a quick break here to take a drink.
Maybe I will.
As being the director of the mission from 85 to 96, it's probably somewhat of a tough question for you to answer. But what is the most enjoyable part as being the director of the city mission?
I believe the results in people's lives makes it worthwhile. There are times when you kind of tear your hair and there are the details and so forth. But I believe the overall encouragement to minister there is the fact that we are reaching people and helping them change, have their lives changed. It's been a real joy to my wife and I to have lived long enough to see some of those young people from the 70s who have established families and have gone on in their education and so forth, and many of whom come back to volunteer at the City Mission, and to see them grow up and now see their children growing up and some of them going on to college is just, it's really so rewarding and exciting to us. As a director, you don't have as close a contact as we had with the clients as we did in the youth program. But at the same time, you're aware of what's happening and you can see the difference in people's lives. And many of them come back also to volunteer. Some come back and serve on the staff or are hired at the mission as well.
What is the hardest thing about being the director as far as what's the most discouraging thing?
Well, you know, we rejoice in the success stories, but we hurt over those who fall back, but we don't give up on them. We try to keep an open door so that, you know, even if they fall back, they know that under conditions that they would be welcome back. I think it's also difficult, but challenging for us to see the changing conditions in society. And some of this I have heard about as far as the progression is concerned, but and the rest, some of it I've experienced. But years ago, when my father was involved, the homeless, they were just homeless men pretty much, and primarily they were alcoholics. And they were housed overnight in a place called the Wayfarers Lodge, which I'm not sure exactly where that was. And the mission would feed them a meal and have a chapel service, and then those men would go to, actually I've heard that they bedded down in straw in this large building. And then my dad was part of a team at one time that occasionally would go and they would have a service at the Wayfarers Lodge. And I believe it was in probably the late 40s that the city decided to close the Wayfarers Lodge. And it was at that point the City Mission and other organizations in the city made accommodations to house the men. And so that introduced the dormitories and so forth for the homeless men. And then we kind of progressed from that to attempting to provide a, you know, they would come and have a meal and stay overnight and then leave in the morning and be back out on the street. And so with our move to East 55th in Carnegie, and even preceding that some in the warehouse district, we were able to provide some educational programs and things that would help them to develop in their lives. And so with the move, again, in the men's program and now in our women's program, you know, we have computer labs and everything. We're trying to give them the tools to progress in their lives. The hardest part is seeing the needs of the people, but the exciting part is being able, in a small degree, to accommodating those needs and helping the people to get out of their particular situation. Then in the 70s, we began having women with children arriving alone or with children arriving on the doorsteps at West 4th Street, asking for a place to stay. They knew we were a mission, and we were filled with male residents at that point. So that challenged our board of trustees and our directorship at that time to expand and to establish. They established Angelin Christian Home on the west side of Cleveland at that point to accommodate emergency women in emergencies. As the youth ministry grew, the camp, they acquired a camp so that they could be sure of a facility that would be, you know, that they could manage. They were renting camps and were not real satisfied with that situation. So with the needs of the young people, they acquired this camp. And we feel that God led us to all of these. And it was a 600-acre property. And it was previously a Jewish camp that was no longer functioning. And there were board members who mortgaged their homes in order for us to acquire that camp for the kids. And so it's been our joy to see that develop from rather primitive accommodations to very, very nice accommodations for not only our young people, but others as well. So the needs have been driven by either growth in the programs or the needs of society, and we have accepted the challenge and through the years, and God has helped us. So,
if I can go back to a comment you just made, there were board members who sacrificed their mortgage just for to help the city mission, just to help these people.
This occurred. That became available just after, by urban renewal, the mission was moved from East 9th in St. Clair for the Bond Court complex to the West 4th location. And at that time, they went in debt. The mission went in debt to acquire the West 4th property. What they got from urban renewal didn't enable them to just transfer. And so then this camp became available, and they liked it. They saw, they had a vision for it, and they didn't have the money even for a down payment. And so there were those who sacrificed and made that possible. And then just before I became the director, we sold 300 acres that we never set foot on to a developer for more than we paid for 600 acres and all the buildings that were there. So once for one, the camp was debt-free at that point, and so I had the privilege and the joy of having capital campaigns and building the Clifton Gregory Youth Center and now many dormitories and playing fields and a full-scale field house for recreation. So,
and it actually seems to me that the people who work at the city mission are truly in love with the mission and love seeing it, you know, develop and into what it is. You know, where does this mindset, come from?
I think there's a heritage there, and there is always a carryover. The longevity of our leadership is amazing. We've had people in staff positions for 20 years. The Gregorys were there for 35 years. The founding director was there for 30 years. And so there's a carryover from each generation into the next generation of people of faith and heart that are motivated, that I think is the continuum, I think, of that dedication is what we have experienced. And as each person, you know, sort of passes the wand, it's you're looking for someone, a person of strong faith and dedication that will continue that. So.
And the city mission is definitely, it seems to me that it's so committed to finding the best people to help the organization proceed into the future.
I believe that's true. From our board of trustees on down, they've been prominent men of faith who have certainly helped steer us with their professional abilities and gifts and means.
Do you have former people who went through the mission and graduated the program at the city mission who currently have jobs at the mission or serve on the board? It's people who went through the program.
Yes, there are in the men's and the women's, especially there are those who came through the program and have been brought back on in leadership capacities. Yeah, the youth ministry, has a smaller staff, and we have had on the staff some who grew up in the program, went to college, and came back. Currently, we don't have that kind of. We have good leadership, but they're not a continuum of the programs at this point. But that changes. Yeah.
We need a little recording light outside. Like they had in TV days, a little red light. And
Mr. Banfield, earlier you were discussing about how the mission had artists that come on used to perform. Can you elaborate on that briefly?
That referred to my early life as a youngster and as a young teenager, and these were key young people who were very gifted that the director at that time used to send out to the churches. And so I think that was in the back of my mind, and I'm not sure exactly what occurred along that line in the interim years between him and mine, but when I became the director of the youth ministry, we discovered that there were young people with gifts within the group, and I think of one young man who played piano by ear, and he could hear a song and then just sit down and play it. And he became the accompanist for a vocal group that would go out that we called the Missionaires, and they would perform in churches or youth programs. I can remember taking them to provide the music for our Endowment Foundation annual dinner at a country club somewhere. Wow. And the kids did so well. And people love to hear the stories of the mission. And I think it's one of the best fundraisers that you could ever have. Wow. It inspires them. And so that has continued. And God sent a lady who is a graduate of Juilliard School of Music, who majored in voice and piano, and she directed that group, and they were very successful, did a nice job for us. So, and sometimes it depends on the group of residents who are in the men's programs. There will be some that get together because of their musical interests, and they have performed as a small choral group or something at certain activities within the mission.
Wow.
So it's encouraged. Something that has been passed through the generation has been the sense that, you lift people up by making them feel their personal worth. And although our building at West 4th and St. Clair, where I began serving, although it was an old building, it was they were always very careful that it was clean. And I remember our women's auxiliary would have projects of making handmade quilts so that all the beds in the men's dormitory at the beginning of each season would have matching spreads. And I remember Mrs. Gregory, the previous director's wife, was there just about every day. And she'd come into the lobby, and it became kind of a joke, but she would always straighten the pictures and rearrange the furniture just a little bit so that it would be more presentable when people would come in. The men wear ties, shirts and ties, which I think they're relaxing a little bit on, but for years you could tell our men by the way they looked, they appeared. And it was important for them because they recalled what it was like not to be able to bathe or to have good clothes or clean clothes. And so that was never something that they rebelled against. They did. And so sometimes you see guys out at our present location, they're mowing the grass with their shirt and tie. There's always been that sense that we had a responsibility to provide safe and comfortable, if not elegant, quarters for all of our programs. And I think it's been, to me, I've observed, especially when we moved into the new facilities, and I'd hear the horror stories about what happened in the school properties and so forth, that at our camp and both in the youth programs, the kids are so respectful. We it's very, very rare that we have any type of graffiti even. It gives them a sense of belonging to and being a part of and some ownership in something that's really nice.
How long does somebody, can somebody who needs, adequate shelter and food and things of that nature, how long can somebody stay at the City Mission for?
Okay, there for the men's program, which is called, the youth program is called Pathways. I made a mistake earlier. Pathways is the youth organization, and the Crossroads Ministry is the men's ministry. Okay. There's the overnight for the person desperate coming off the street. They have to check in at a certain time. And they, I believe, can get up to a week's free lodging with meal. And they don't have to go out during the daytime. There's a day room where they may stay if they need to. And they're encouraged to move out of that situation into a residential situation. And sometimes we're at capacity in the long term, which is somewhat varied based upon the progress of the gentleman himself as to how long it would be, and we kind of go with the flow there based upon how they're progressing. But we encourage them to stay long enough so that they're able to get on their feet. And we do have some transitional apartments on the campus where they can have a period of time in which a couple guys will share a small apartment, and they're learning to manage their money and provide for their own eating and so forth. Until they get on their feet and can afford to move on from that point. So that's kind of the nature. So we also want to avoid making them dependent upon us. So there's a fine line there which varies, with individuals. But we do all that we can to encourage them to.
If I can ask you for a second, what does the mission require that somebody just coming in do in like in order to have an extended stay at the mission? Does one need to find a job and maintain their income, or
okay, most of them are without a job when they come, and that's pretty much why they come. And in fact, we discourage them from going out to find work until they have completed a stage of the program where we feel that they're more secure in their lifestyle and so forth.
If I could interrupt you, how long is that?
I think it would depends. It depends on the individual, but I'm thinking maybe up to 9 months, and then there would be the transitional. After they find the employment, then there's the other. Some have families to go back to. They do have homes, and of course we encourage, we discourage that up until a point, but if they can get back into family situation, we encourage the rebuilding of that relationship while they're there, and then from there many of them go back home and into employment.
What is the, it's kind of a premature question, but what is the success rate of males who come into program and go through the whole program and then once they finish the program leave and begin a new life is.
I wish our the director of the men's the program was here. I'm not sure what those latest statistics are, not having been, not a director for a while. And I've heard them thrown. I'm a terrible numbers person, so yeah. But there's a good, I feel a good proportion of the men that and women that. Our long-term program for women is just getting on its feet, so we really don't have a track record there at Laura's home. But with the men, because it's been going on for years, there are statistics out there, which I'm sorry I can't provide at this time. I would if I had it in my head. I should have thought of that.
A question that I was going to ask earlier, crossed my mind till now, and you actually tried to fill me in on that a bit. The City Mission has moved numerous times from East 4th, the location at the Speakeasy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Carnegie to numerous other local locations. Why so many changes and how different is each location?
Okay, that the Speakeasy was apparently at, and I didn't remember this, that was before my time, 1910. It was, and I'm not sure where Prohibition was along that time, but anyway, it was at West 3rd and Superior. And I think that changed a whole lot because that's from that 1910 to what?
I'm sorry, but that's the first location.
That was the first location, and that was the former Speakeasy. And in that DVD I gave you, somebody has some pictures, apparently of that, right, which I had never seen before. Uh-huh. So, anyway, the story goes that the first meeting they had there, they served coffee out of the old drink glasses that had been used for other. other beverages previously, and it apparently was, fairly small, and I have no dimensions or anything, but from there, I believe, they built one new building, but I have an idea that there was probably another temporary or short-term program, but obviously with expansion of ministries came the need for building. That's been one of the motivating factors for the mission. And I'm sure that was in those first three locations that as it continued to grow, they had to maybe go to other quarters to accommodate. And even probably going to East 9th and St. Clair. And then that move from East 9th to West 4th was motivated by urban renewal. And then we weren't forced out of the warehouse district. They were very accommodating in a sense and understanding, but the zoning laws made it necessary for us to make that move. The difference between that and moving from East 9th to West 4th was the property had appreciated so to such a degree in the warehouse district that we were able to not go in debt to acquire the acreage and some of the buildings at East 55th. And then we launched a $6 to $7 million capital campaign to build the newer buildings there. And at this point in our history, we determined that we were not going to build or acquire anything that we couldn't pay for. And that funding came in so that within a year's time after acquiring the land, we had all the new and renovated buildings in place.
Has the funding of the city mission has it increased or decreased over the years and to now?
It has gradually increased. Obviously, it has its high times and its low times, and the summertime is probably the most difficult time for us. Our programs continue, but that's a period of time when people don't feel that homeless people hurt. You know, the weather is comfortable and so forth. So that's the more difficult time. So we try to build a reserve in advance so that we'll carry us. Economic situations change. And when we purchased the facility that has become Laura's home on the west side, it was prior to 9/11, and we were into the capital campaign at that point. And then the ensuing financial decline after 9/11 and the just the general climate of finance turned bad. It's been a struggle for us there, but we were able to complete that building without an indebtedness. But it's moving ahead now.
Do you believe that in some aspects that financial lack of financial resources doesn't attempt you to the organization to develop more? You think it hinders the growth of the mission?
No, we are people of faith, and our board have been people of faith, and God has done wonderful things in that area, as you realize, for us. So we do trust Him to provide, and we move ahead, and I believe He honors that faith. And I think probably we'd be more cautious. We do have a track record to look back on, and you referred to the Great Depression. The mission went through that, and it's interesting to note from our history that in times of depression, for some reason, people are moved to respond in giving. So we're this last one has been kind of a test because of moving into such a larger the Laura's home. No, we did. The Laura's home, which is out on West 150th Street. Yeah, that's been a little more of a test of our faith because of the magnitude of that project. But it's working out okay.
One last financial question, if I can ask you. Mm-hmm. How does the mission? How do the board of the directors of the city mission know what departments? Know what department needs more help, financially. How does the mission allocate those financial resources adequately to each organization?
The division heads or department heads are all part of an administrative team, so. And each of them are responsible in the budgeting process to present their goals and their needs on an annual basis. Now, sometimes our history has been that the outside need has dictated what we have done financially. For instance, the introduction of dormitories, a live-in situation for men, later the establishment of Angelin Christian Home for Women and Children was came from the necessity of the people we serve. And so what I have found from my experience is a very gracious staff. And after we, and the planning process for the East 55th campus was so exciting because the department heads, division heads, the staff were invited by our architect to just express their, you know, their wildest dreams of what they might have that way, and as a starting point. And so they had so much input in the design of that building, coming out of their expertise in ministry, knowing what they have wanted and desired and so forth. We're now, as far as the men's program is concerned, at capacity, and have been for a few years. But the need for the long-term women's program has driven our leadership to meet that need. And so those who, you know, have needs but are, you know, they have a place to be are very accommodating and allowing something else. It's a wonderful team. We've been through this process. There were things that had to be done at camp, for instance. And so some things are put on hold, and the people are gracious, and they work together, and it's a beautiful team.
Now going back to the history of the City Mission, when it first started in 1910, it used to cater to immigrants and to overall the people, City of Cleveland. Currently now, I believe that it caters to the people who live in around the just the surrounding neighborhoods. Is that?
Yes. Well, that was true in the beginning. The immigrants were both from the South and also from Europe, settled in kind of the tenement housing that was available really around the central city. And so we drew from those who were nearby. Then it was pretty much walking in, and they provide bathing facilities and of course, food and the Sunday school and sewing classes and those types of things. And in some ways, the neighborhoods have changed geographically so that we were concerned with the move to East 55th Street, whether we would be, you know, convenient to the homeless, but we've rarely had nights where we weren't full. They have been able to find us and get there. When I started in the youth program was integrated because the central city was more integrated. It was divided by the river, and the projects on the west side were mostly Caucasians, and then the inner city projects of the young people, from which we drew the young people, were African American, but then the housing situation changed so that the Caucasians on the west side seemed to move further out, and it, pretty soon geographically it became impractical. So it's almost quite a, we're open to anyone who needs us, but because of the geographic location, I think there's a majority of African American folks available to us.
In that particular location, on the one on East 55th in Carnegie, would you say the most of those people there are from the surrounding neighborhoods?
Not necessarily the homeless, because somehow they, but I think the youth program is because of the association with the schools in the neighborhood. But we have people come from the suburbs, actually, the homeless people, maybe referred by other social service agencies and so forth. And so I think there's the potential for more integration there. But we're open. You know, our hearts are open to all.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a brief question about the women's movement in the City Mission and how that has developed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
What made the mission, you know, what made the mission to build a separate organization, you know, for for females, you know, what prompted the desire.
Well, in the beginning, when we founded Angela and Christian Home, the building at West 4th Street was you know, already as much as we could accommodate. And so, and also, I think it just was felt that it would be very difficult to integrate women's and men's program in the same facility unless it were designed specifically for that. And I know of other, we belong to an international association of rescue missions, and I'm aware of the fact that there are some of our missions that have designed facilities that will accommodate both genders. Yeah. But I would say the great majority find it works, it's more comfortable in having them at separate locations. And then I'm pretty sure that probably motivated the mission.
Do you currently have more females or men in the organization? If you were to say who utilized the facility, the organization.
With the opening of our Laura's home, that because of the space provided there, currently they're accommodating over 100 women and women with children at this point. And I think they can grow a little more, probably up to 140. That was a former mental hospital, so it's quite a large facility.
So Angela Christian Home was a former?
No, Laura's home. Right. In fact, we're merging the ministries of Angela and Home and Laura's Home into one facility, the one larger facility at this point for economic reasons. And we'll be still doing the same programs, but that building is designed so that we can do that for, which is true among the men. They have the short-term and the long-term program within the same building. But Laura's Home duplicates the square footage size of our whole campus at East 55th Street. So it has, it's enabling us to reach more. So at this point, the ladies are ahead in being accommodated. But the men's staff is wringing their hands and wondering when we can expand.
If I can get off the topic for a second, what kind of the relationship does the city mission have with the city of Cleveland? If you can elaborate on
that. I would say comfortable. In some ways, it's more neighborhood perhaps than the whole city. We don't seek the support, the financial support of the city. We try to network. Each of the ministries networks with other similar ministries in the city, and we make referrals back and forth. I can remember just in the 70s when even homelessness with the men had expanded so that everybody was being overloaded. We formed a mutual association at that time, and we pursued the city to open up the lobby of the Justice Center so that they would put up, because we were sleeping people in hallways and gyms, men, this is, and it was, we had to hire security and so forth. It was very volatile, and this was occurring with all the other agencies as well. And so we banded together in that, and we were successful in that occurring, and I think the city has since maintained sort of a large mass place where the overflow from the existing shelters go. But that started out in the magnificent Justice Center lobby. And we provided, the agencies provided oversight, leadership, and so forth. But the city provided the space for that period of emergency time. So in the neighborhoods where we, when I became the director of the city mission, the warehouse gentrification committee was appointed and so forth, and I joined that organization to be a part of the community. And then when it was determined that we were going to move into the East 55th Carnegie, that would be the Midtown, was called the Midtown Corridor Association. And immediately I joined that so that we had a communication with the people there. And there was concern on the part of that, the business people of that area, about the mission coming in, because I think of the concept that they have of what missions are like, which we have always tried to avoid. It's interesting that it's turned out to be a good relationship. And before I left or retired, we were hosting the monthly meeting of the Midtown Corridor Association on our facilities. And I paid a visit there recently when I was back, and someone came and thanked me for the kind of facility that we have brought into the neighborhood and the respect for the neighborhood. So, you have to work hand in hand, and I think we've done that quite successfully.
How the time around the city mission is with all the volunteers and all the Thanksgiving, Christmas, how's that like?
It's very, very busy. And in fact, we have a semi-trailer in the yard right now, which is being loaded to send down to the hurricane. We have two missions in New Orleans and one in Biloxi that were destroyed from our association. So we're teaming up with the Haven of Rest Ministries in Akron and I believe the Youngstown Mission to send some volunteers and supplies down to help our missions to get reestablished in those areas. I'm forgetting what our question was.
The holiday,
yes. It's very busy. We have special meals, just very nice Thanksgiving and Christmas banquets, actually, for the homeless people. But we also, for the families, provide baskets of food for dinner for them to prepare at home. And so that's very active. The children are involved in Christmas shopping for their family, which is funded. They're given an allowance, and there are special things for them. So like with everyone else, the holidays are very, very, very special, and we try to make up to our people for, what they're missing otherwise.
How does somebody become a volunteer in the city mission?
There is an email address that I don't have in my head either, but a phone call to the city mission, and we're in the directory just to ask for the volunteer department, and I'm sure they'll be happy to send information. And we couldn't survive without volunteers, right? It's just so many, many people are involved. Just an example, the meals, the evening meals for the homeless men, and it's starting with the women now as that's growing, are brought in by groups of people. They provide, prepare, and serve the evening meal to our people. And that's been typical for as long as I've ever known the mission. So that helps us a lot.
Wow. As the city mission currently is now, what would you say that the future holds for the city mission as far as its continuous growth and as far as the overall mission that the organization holds?
Right. As far as the vision is concerned, I'm very grateful for the fact that the vision has been handed down since 1910, and we kind of remarked together that the purpose and the goals of the mission as it was established are very carefully being upheld and practiced by our leadership today, and we hold that. Also, from our track record, I would say that because of their faithfulness to God, God is going to be faithful to us as the needs are presented, and so we keep expanding and moving ahead and trying to accommodate the needs. And I haven't mentioned our prison ministry, and a lot of people are not aware of that, but we have a full-time mission, a chaplain with volunteers, and that's been historic as far as the mission is concerned. There's always been. In fact, in the early days, the city mission provided the chaplain for the county prison here in the city. We provided that for the county. And of course, that's changed over the years, but we still have a team that goes in to the Justice Center in the county.
That's still occurring?
Right. There now is a head chaplain, which the county provides, and then they coordinate the groups that come in. So we work, this is an area in which we work with the existing city people. And then we provide correspondence when a man is sentenced and transferred to a state prison. We try to follow those men up, and we have a gentleman who was our chaplain, is now retired, but he continues to set aside certain portions of his time to go visit the inmates in the various state prisons and follows up. And then there's a ongoing correspondence with these men, and we are open to receive them after they've completed their time. Mission.
How much longer do you anticipate yourself being active in the city mission for?
As long as God enables us to be. My wife has been a partner all the years that I've been here, and so she's been as busy as I have in that work. She she came from a banking background, so before I became the director, while Reverend Gregory was there, he brought her on to head up the to break her into being the financial person there, and she worked with the accountants and so forth. When we were in the youth ministry, she had a job outside of that. she would come and teach a Sunday school class and work with the teenagers and have them to our house, and so she's been a real. They call her mom. We had no children of our own, so we had to borrow other people's. Yeah.
As far as my questions for you is primarily over. Is there anything that you would like to ask me?
No, I hadn't thought of any questions. I think we discussed the purpose of this, and I think it's wonderful, and I'm glad to have been included in part of this. Hope it's helpful.
Well, thank you for participating, Mr. Banfield. My name is Eugene Jacobo, and I would like to thank Mr. Banfield for taking part in this project. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
I have one final thing to add, and that's Mr. Banfield. Could you name any other people that we might contact for Eugene to interview, or for future people to interview with the Euclid Corridor Project, people who have been involved with the city mission for a number of years?
Directly related to the mission, someone?
Either directly related or in any other way related to Euclid Avenue.
I see.
And its surroundings. And we can get phone numbers at another time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this would be a good way, so we don't have to write it down here at the end of the interview.
Yes.
And then we can remind you and ask you for numbers later. You mentioned Clifton Gregory. Is he still living?
No, he's passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife. I'm thinking in terms of some of our emeritus board members, but they're older than I am, even, and pretty fairly confined. We had our 95th anniversary banquet a few days ago, and a man to me. His name is Joe Robinson. And Joe's career had been with company was a kind of a line man here, but as a young man at the East 9th Street Mission, he was part of that program, and Joe has continued as a volunteer with the youth program all these years. I don't know if that would be the type of person that you'd like to pursue.
Eugene mentioned also, one of his questions made me think of this. He asked if many people are among those who are now volunteering or on the staff of the mission.
Okay.
And I thought that might be an interesting avenue to approach as well, just to look at people and ask who have, you know, started out coming for help from the mission. That would be an interesting perspective because they've been on both sides of the city mission, even if they haven't been there for many, many years.
Right. That's reflected mostly now in the path, Crossroads program with the men. Peter Bliss is the director of ministries at this point at the mission. Some of these names escape me because they're more recent than Wayne Bay is a gentleman that that kind of grew up with the mission or became a part of the men's program who continues. Perhaps I could give that some thought and get back get back to you or either one of you, okay?
Sure.
No, I don't know if Pete Bliss is an interesting story. He has been, his father had been, and this is years ago, his father came into the mission program off the street. His mother happened to be anyway, they met, and Peter was a result of that union, and unfortunately, I think his father fell back later on, so he was raised by his mother, who continued as a volunteer at the mission, and when I became director, he came on the men's staff, and he was the director of Crossroads Ministries, and now he's director of Christian Ministry. But I think he would be someone that would be good. He's also earned a doctorate in that period of time.
Wow.
And he has not been someone that has been used, and I don't know whether he'd have any hesitation because of the situation with his dad, I don't know, but that would be someone I'd like you to approach. And that'd be good. And this Joe Robinson is not on staff, but has been, a regular. He was with East Ohio Gas, I remember, because he coached basketball when I was the youth director, and I was not an athlete. So I was always glad for Joe. But every now and then, Joe would call me just before a basketball game and said, I've got to get out in winter. You know, he's been called out because there's a failure, and he has to get out there. So I'd end up coaching the guys or being there with him anyway. It was interesting. But Joe's just been so faithful through the years. And so on. And if I, if I pull out some others, there's some more recent that have been hired back at the mission that, I wasn't around to get really well acquainted with. So they're there.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Enjoyed working with you very
thank
much.
You.